It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All right. We're back on the bike. Nick Baugh, Bo Ruth. How good does this feel? It has been way too long.
Is podcasting like riding a bike?
I don't know. We're going to find out. I've been doing nothing but like solo pods, so I don't know how I'm going to be like playing with someone else here, but you and I will snap back into it. This is good. We have multiple months of things built up to talk about in the world of Nebraska football.
Yeah, it's been the cold winter of no pods.
Right.
But like we were just talking about, there's just a lot of things that were that kind of came up. No Nebraska football.
Right. You had a big trip. I got busy with hoops. Then like your kid would get sick. My kid would get sick. You'd get sick. I would get sick. Like it just.
And then we pretty much just punted and said, let's get through March Madness.
Let's just wait till UConn wins the national title, and then
but it's
then
we'll good because here. You can feel Husker football just like the first spring practice. Like
right.
You can kind of feel the like, oh yeah, now it's time to get back into Nebraska football.
Well, we were talking before we turned on the mics. There's this weird dynamic, and I want to start like kind of deep and broad with things before we get a little bit more specific, but as specific as you can with spring football here.
Yeah.
We're not gonna be like, so what do you think about the right guard situation? We were talking before. It feels like the Scott Frost time as a head coach was such a long time ago. And you made the interesting point. Like I brought up the fact that it was because I think a part of that is because he was fired so early in the season. But because there was Mickey that was the head coach and now Rhule, he's like two coaches removed in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, are we 6 months since Frost was fired? I mean, maybe a little bit more.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more. I mean,
yes.
He was fired in
six,
September,
7 months. Yeah,
so
mid-September.
October, November, yeah. December, January. Yeah, I mean, 7 months. And it's like, it feels like years ago, but it's not even a year.
It was just last season,
yeah.
You know? But it doesn't really feel like that. But what's the other thing I was thinking about was it does kind of feel like, I don't know how it is for you in your conversations with people or what you consume with Husker football. It kind of feels like Frost, he's not in the conversation very much anymore.
No, I think people moved on pretty hardcore. Like it is, I think both Pelini and Solich, there was this big carryover. When they left, there was like scar tissue that people weren't done with those guys.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like it was always a comparison for the other coaches, like, you know, Callahan, Riley had to deal with, but this is how Bo and Frank did it. And they had a lot of success and
right.
They were being compared pretty hard to those guys. And so it was very hard on those coaches because, you know, these coaches that got fired winning 9 games, right?
Yeah.
So there was this lingering carryover that I would argue never left Callahan. It never went away.
I agree.
Callahan never got the fresh start that I think he probably needed,
mm-hmm.
and that was always a problem. Where I feel like Rhule's already got it. It's already done. He is fresh start Matt Rhule.
But isn't that – you would have thought if there would have been anybody that would have still had a hold on you, it would have been Scott Frost.
Correct.
And so – but here's – this is where maybe now I'm getting way too deep. I think people have moved on, but I know for me – I still feel Frost. I feel him in here. I feel him. I still feel him with how I've consumed things. Meaning
explain that.
Yeah, because I want to get into how it's been for you consuming this new era of Matt Rhule and Nebraska football where I've been really reluctant and hesitant to consume a bunch or chug a bunch of Kool-Aid during a typical time where you chug all that, because I still feel the effects, those wounds of Frost. So even though he's out of the conversation, I think subconsciously he's still there for people. I don't know how that is for you. Like, because I do feel like that. I feel like a bunch of different things can be true at once. We're like, I'm tired of the off-season hype to a certain extent. Like, literally, this has been going on for 20 years. Let's not act like some of the stuff that we've said, right? Like,
I love the off-season hype. Okay,
and so do I, but I'm saying, like, I'm tired of, I guess I'm not tired of the off-season hype, but let's not act like a lot of the same recycled things that people are saying about Rule, they didn't say about Pelini, and they didn't say about Frost. You're like, you know what, man? This guy's going to unite the past. Who said, which coach did that?
He spoke to Tom Osborne.
He gets it. He talked to Tom Osborne. This guy understands the importance of Nebraska.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's not, these guys are finally working, man, in the weight room. It's finally happening.
Yeah.
Like, so I guess what I'm saying is, like, I'm all, like, let's chug it. But don't try and sit in, it's almost like some sort of flavored vodka. And they're like, dude, you can't even taste the vodka. It's like, stop fucking lying to yourself.
It's vodka.
It's vodka, okay? Like, I guess that's where I'm at with it. It's like, we can chug the flavored vodka, but let's not act like it's not vodka. Meaning, like, let's not act like we haven't heard a lot of these things before. And I think the reason I feel that way is because of mainly Frost. See, where I felt like I chugged the vodka thinking it was going to be raspberry vodka and I wasn't going to taste the vodka, but I tasted the vodka.
Okay, well, that is a deep take. That's a feelings take. Lots of that's feelings.
You understand how long this has been pent up for me?
Some feelings in there? Okay.
Yes.
So I guess I just view it different. Like, the way you're looking at it, I'm not even looking at. Like, to me, I'm looking at as, let's, I mean, the chugging the Kool-Aid, I think that's more just like, that's doesn't really even matter to the coach. Just like a Husker football fan, kind of, I don't know if it's a tradition or a habit, but like, we do it. I still kind of do it a little bit, but we're all a little trying to be better about not overdoing that. Right. I think that's learned. Don't overdo it. But like, when you say like Frost is a part, like, to me, I actually think like Frost was the first coach we gave every last bit of like, leash to, like, we actually said, we're giving you every attempt to do this, and it really just didn't work out, and it was clear, and because it's clear, I'm very much not hanging on to Scott Frost's legacy in Matt
Rhule. Interesting. That's a great point.
So I think, like I was saying to you, like, is like, whatever it was about Solich and Pelini, like, they hung around the other coaching, like,
great
it just
point
hung.
This is a great point. This
it
is a good
hung
point.
In there
this
I
is
really
a good point.
Think that Frost was the first one that was like, this is done. Like, everybody felt like he had the, he got
this
all
is a
the
great
attempt.
Point.
Yeah.
This is a great point. Like, it's a great point because there is no, I say all of that, like, enacting that Frost is still with me. Not that I think Nebraska made a mistake by firing him. I don't think they did. But it's more
how the reaction to the coach. Well,
no, it's more. And this isn't necessarily a new thought, but it's more, I was so sure it was going to work.
Yeah.
And when you're so sure something's going to work, when you get presented then and it doesn't, and when you get presented then with another situation that you're starting to feel all those things for again, you're like, well, wait a minute. Like, I just was 100, not 99%.
The new
100%.
Girlfriend is always better than the old
That's
girlfriend.
That's clearly, you know?
The new girlfriend, she's always beautiful. She's way cooler than the last girl.
Seriously.
No way she'll have any baggage.
Right.
Right?
I know, but.
But then you live with her for 4 years.
And you'll figure out all the little things that drive you crazy.
Yeah.
But, no, it's a good point, though, in that a part of the ability to move on quickly is knowing for sure it was time to move on. And so I think maybe a part of him not being in, him being Frost, still being in the conversation is that.
Yes.
But I just sometimes can only speak from my perspective. This isn't necessarily like what I've gleaned from talking to people or consuming other people that they're still feeling the effects of Frost. I just know for me, like, I've tried to really observe myself as I've watched a YouTube press conference from Rule, or I've read a story on Rule, where like how it's filtered through my brain a little bit.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you actively trying to keep a little bit more distance from following Nebraska than, like, let's say the usual Scott Frost year? Here's how much you are following the news and and the stories and the hype. Are you now trying to keep a little bit more distance, or are you on the same?
I would say I'm still consuming it. I don't think I've consumed as much as normal. Yeah. I'm not actively avoiding, but there's been times where like a call, like I could go on the Omaha World Herald and read a column on something with Rule, and
the
I'm
new
like,
lineman that just came here, and
why Rule understands the importance of the tight end. I'm like, I'm good on that one.
Does he, or maybe.
I don't know. Like, so I'm not actively avoiding it. I'm still consuming it, but I do think like if you know when you get the iPhone, like your screen time pops up, like
screen
my Nebraska time is down a little bit. It's down a little bit, but that's not necessarily something I'm intentionally trying to do.
I think there are people, Nick, that have had to make the decision for their own sanity that they need to
pull it back.
They need to reel back how much they're consuming, especially off-season, right? Yeah. Off-season hype, they get too excited. I guess for me,
how has it been for you?
I had a nice little break. I went away for, few weeks. I got to go on vacation.
Yeah.
I took a nice little call. February was kind of just my
I'm checking out.
I was in another country. I was just out of the world, right? So I feel like since I got back, though, I've been very refreshed and just been like, I feel like it is a clean slate. Like I'm just giving Matt Rule's clean start and his due to like, all right, I'm a Husker fan. I'm following pretty much as I always have.
Okay.
I get the World Herald. I check some, doing the stuff, and it is, the hype machine's rolling as usual, and that's good. I'm fine with it. But like, I'm back to where I kind of was with Frost. I did need, I think, just a little reset.
And maybe that's what it was. Like I think I took that in combination with my basketball stuff that I was having to do for Fox and all that to really, I checked out.
Yeah.
More than I have in 10 plus years.
Yeah.
And again, I've definitely gotten back into it now. But here's the thing that's crazy, though, is I say all that to also admit that every single time that guy, Matt Rule, gets in front of the media, I am not kind of impressed. I'm wildly impressed. I am captivated, and it's not just that it's like well-spoken. Like to me, there is, some coaches get up there and be like, it's we're going to go out there and, it's really about, how bad we really want to go out there and, strap it up and go to work.
Yeah.
And you're like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
He says, there is to me real thought and substance behind everything he does. And there is a reason for everything that he believes, what they do, all that. And so even though I feel a little scarred and all the things I just said, I still, every time I listen to that guy, I'm like, wow, that's the kind of guy you want leading your program.
He seems to have a real understanding of what his job is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I've watched a lot of coaches over the years, and this isn't just Nebraska. I'm just talking about coaches in different fields, basketball. He's dialed in.
Right.
So I don't know if he's that great of an X's and O's coach. I really don't. I don't know if he, is a great game manager. I don't really know how good he is at developing kids. I don't really know that. But the perception he gives me is that he's dialed in.
Yes.
He is dialed in on every facet. And that is the part that I am almost not used to with the average coach. The average coach in my life and the different levels and different, like they're usually good at one thing or this is their strong suit and I pass that stuff off to somebody else. He seems to do, besides like what you do in the locker room and on the field, which I don't know what
he does.
Yeah,
you can only, right.
That's what I don't know if he's good at, but all the stuff around it, the sort of like CEO of a big operation thing, that he seems dialed in with. Recruiting, promoting,
branding, messaging.
Messaging.
All, like,
seemingly just like whatever that, whatever it is that, you know, you need a lot of energy and detail with, he seems to get that. And I'm impressed with it.
I agree.
However, that doesn't mean he can do the job on the field yet.
Right.
Can he get his guys to actually play and win and smart and X's and O's and outs, you know, all the things that usually you think that's what a coach does. He hasn't proven that. But he's proving the peripheral stuff that's involved. It's a bigger part of the game right now than it maybe ever has been.
Right.
It's a big part of the game. And he's doing that stuff well.
I couldn't agree more. And again, you still got to go out there and you know, if all this is fine and dandy, you still got to go out there and you know, 12 Saturdays in the fall are going to come and we'll see what happens. We understand that.
Yeah, like, he goes 0-12. He's a bad coach. You know what I mean? Like you're not a good coach. You maybe you're a great CEO of a football program, bad coach. Like what, you know, like you got to have both aspects to
it. I just think he feels like that. And it's hard because you would have said, well, you didn't think Frost fit or Pelini fit. Like, yeah, I think. But no, there were elements of Bo that were like, oh, you know, this maybe isn't like ideal. Maybe how he would conduct himself with the media at times, whatever. Right. Not that that stuff matters a ton, but like he seems to fit and check every box from all the things you just laid out that you could want in someone leading your program.
Yeah.
And so I've been wildly impressed with all of that.
Yeah. I think we should be clear, like that's not to take away from any of the past coaches who, like, I just think he's a little bit different of a guy. He's kind of a different coach than I'm used to. I don't know if I'm how comfortable I am with his style yet as a football coach. I'm just saying like the things he's doing I'm seeing are
right.
But like his style is, it's kind of unique. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet.
The thing that is interesting though, and maybe this is how it typically is with a new coach, and we should have great experience with this because we've all been through this so many times. But what is interesting though is throughout this entire process, the main focal point of everything has always been rule for me. There's never been an assistant coach or a player or anybody else that is even close to risen up to being, I mean, the only other story that's been equally as big at times is Raiola that we'll get to in a second. But like, does that make sense? Like there's no, I can't think of, like, I don't even know, like right now, so far the most talked about player in spring has been
Raiola.
Probably a guy that's not even on the team.
Or our boy Gabe Irvin's in there.
Gabe done did his thing.
He's Gabe Irvin. Right. We've defended Gabe.
We've been in Gabe's corner.
I've had people on the street stop me and go, I think Gabe Irvin's good too. I'm glad you know, there's a lot of Gabe Irvin loyalists out there.
We have finally been getting
their due.
Oh, I want Gabe to go on to have a great career because we've been in his corner from the jump. But does that make, like, it does feel like though, it's amazing how it's all, and maybe this is because one thing Rule does a really good job of is even when he talks up Gabe Irvin, he'll also like mention everybody else all the time. Like he never fully, there hasn't been anybody else that has risen past Rule at this point. And maybe that's the nature of when a new coach takes over, they're going to get first, second, and third billing, you know, like, and that's just how it is. But the other thing with Rule that I think is interesting, and this will lend us into this because this is good. He does feel like he has a genuine understanding and reverence for that isn't forced at all for Nebraska football.
Yeah.
And for its history, its tradition, its people that have come before him. He has a great understanding of that. How about the fact that Frank Solich is finally coming back and he will be honored at the spring game. If you recall, we talked about and have been clamoring for a breaking of the curse,
yes,
bringing Solic back, having some sort of, I don't know what you need to have, a sacrifice seance of a Fairbury hot dog, a seance or whatever.
Chop
I don't
the
know
head off a Fairbury hot
you,
dog.
You, yeah, you Der Wiener Slinger or something. And I don't know what you need to do. But Frank Solic is coming back.
I read that in the paper, and my mind went to our conversation.
Oh, yeah. I was getting flooded. Like, it's happening. It's happening.
Because it's symbolic to something that we feel like was the breaking point of Nebraska football. Like, the decision to get rid of Solic, unjustified as it was, in our opinion, like, in 2003, like, it's a chain reaction. And it feels like maybe you have to come full circle to break
that's
whatever
what
the
I
spell
thought,
has been.
I thought Chattel put it perfectly in his column about it, because it literally, like, took the thoughts out of my brain and put them on paper. Like, because I do kind of, I don't know if I'm one of those guys that fully believes in curses and hexes and all that stuff, but, like, there is a little bit of sports karma out there, I think, that exists. And I do, there is a part of me that kind of believes in this curse that Nebraska pissed off the football gods. Yeah. And the firing of Frank created that curse, and it wasn't solely about Frank Solic, the individual. It wasn't just about his 6 years as a head coach. It was more about kind of the 50 years of totality that Frank represented.
Yeah.
It felt like Frank represented winning football, a winning formula with toughness, the style of play, the option, development, culture, all those things. And Nebraska, for 50 years, obeyed that formula. For 40 years, obeyed that formula. And they won. And then all of a sudden, they said, fuck you to the football gods.
Yeah.
Disobeyed the formula. Didn't appreciate winning. So there's a part of it's like the football gods were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Nebraska, your curse. And Nebraska's been wandering around this football maze trying to find their way out ever since. And so Solic coming back could be a gesture to the football gods.
Yeah, I think there is something, like you said, we were not grateful. Like, we were not grateful to be, you know, a team in the top 10 or 20 every year, going to national championships, and then having a down year and then bounce. You know, like, we were not, like, we didn't show the patience with Solic to give him the chance that he deserved, I think, from his time and effort he put in and the winning he had done. Like, you got to give people their due, I think, before you, you know, like I said, before they made that decision. I just think it was rushed and it was not justified. And I think we've been paying for it since. And I think it just comes down to, maybe that sounds crazy, but there's something to him coming back that may be important.
Yeah. On some level, I do, as much as I don't believe in this curse, I do kind of believe in this curse.
Crazy juju curses? Maybe.
Sure, I don't
just,
know.
I just think there's something to it. It's like, is momentum in sports real? It feels real.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Like,
feels real.
Yeah, like, you can't necessarily quantify it. You can't necessarily see it, but you know it's there. And any way you slice it, since 2003, it's been 20 years of wandering around trying to find their way, trying to find your way out of this.
Yeah.
And maybe bringing Solic back can feel...
It feels like the right time, too, just because it does feel like such a clean, fresh start with Rule, that, like, it feels a long ways away from Frank to where there shouldn't be any animosity left. And I think, you know, Solic is more of a private guy anyway, but I think Trev really pushed hard on him.
That's what I was going to say. You know, what's amazing, though, to me is, and because I wrote down, like, Matt Rule has done a really amazing job of connecting the past, but I think the guy who's really done that is Trev.
Yeah, I mean, as much as you can give, I'll give Rule credit for not messing things up, but, like, Trev is behind a lot of this. Like, Trev is also behind a lot of these, like,
I would think, like,
here's how we should message. I think he's influencing that a lot. Like, Rule's got to deliver. I think Trev's like, here's the playbook on your messaging.
Right.
This will work. And I think Rule then has an intuition for it and can deliver.
Mm-hmm. But I also think, like, because it is interesting to me, because, again, this is where I talked about how I have Scott Frost scar tissue all over the place. No! Don't you dare
laugh! I don't know why you're funny to me. Right now. It's been a while, but you're funny to me right now.
But you know you're not over someone. You know you're not over. You know you're not over
you're
someone.
Touching your whole
I was
body.
Touching myself.
No, I got scar
I was
tissue.
Patting myself down. All I have scar over. Tissue. You know, all over
heart.
The place. My heart, my soul. But you know you're not over someone completely when something happens and your first thought is about that person, not about what's going on. So, yeah. Like, for instance, I saw, not sure if you saw it, there was a 45-minute sit-down that was on Nebraska's social media and YouTube channels on a full in-depth conversation with Trev Alberts, Matt Rhule, and Tom Osborne. And they 45 minutes of a free-flowing discussion about coaching, all this stuff. And my first thought was like, why didn't they ever do that with Frost? And maybe Frost didn't want to do it or whatever. But like I thought, well, man, I wonder how Frost feels watching that. Then I see this Solich thing. And I'm like, wow, Frank, he didn't want to come back for Frost, but he'll come back for Rhule. And again, I think this is more about Trev, but what I'm trying to get to, and I'm just being honest with you guys, like, is that Scott Frost scar tissue in me. Because I just think it's interesting, like, that all these things, like, just the way in which Tom Osborne has really embraced and propped up Rhule is interesting.
Yeah.
The Frank coming back now, of all the times to do it now, is interesting to me. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, there are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little, bite-sized, delicious, all-white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. 2-year-old Mac, 6-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better.
Trev's only been there for a year.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Moose was the athletic director.
Yeah, until
he
August
was giving
of,
direction. Yeah. And, you know, and so it's two parts. Like, I think Trev knows what needs to be done for the messaging, and Rhule is open to it and then can deliver on it. Like, the coach has to be open to another coach coming back, right? I'm not saying Frost. I just don't think it was even a conversation. I don't think Moose was thinking about it. I think
Moose is on the ranch.
Moose is on the ranch. I mean, he was having a good time on the ranch. What else? I mean, I like Moose. He seemed like a good guy, but he's on the ranch.
Okay. I'm sorry. But no, you're right. Like, it does. I do think I tend to want to be like, I mean, who knows if Frost's willingness to do some of this stuff.
Why wouldn't Frost probably loves Frank Solich. He actually knows Frank Solich.
Right.
So, like, it's just different with Frost because, one, he knows him, but, two, I don't think he had Trev in the same way that Rhule does now. We're
yeah, because
like,
Bill Moose isn't, you know.
Rhule is Trev's guy, and Trev is giving Rhule the playbook because the one thing Rhule, I think, is smart enough to see is, like, hey, Trev knows this place inside and out.
Yeah.
Trev knows. Like,
right.
Trust what he's saying.
Right.
There's a good bond between those guys. They get each other where, like, you know, Trev came in after Moose left and was like, it was a little bit like, you know, trying to figure out the Frost and the new coaches. Like,
right.
That's what he did his first year with Frost. It was like, this is your kind of make it or break it year was Trev's first year. Right.
Right.
So, Yeah, I just think it's just different now.
It's so just it's, I just have found that interesting where like I kind of thought there would be some hesitancy amongst whether it be certain former players or big fixtures like a Tom Osborne, who, I mean, Scott Frost is, it seems like they're almost like father, son, like mentor, mentee kind of like kind of relationship. And even someone like Frank Solich, I wondered if there'd be this reluctancy or hesitancy to really wrap their arms around the new guy.
Yeah,
because the old guy was a Husker and all those sorts of things. I mean, again, remember that image of when Frost was hired and he went down to the weight room and it was filled with former players. Like, yeah. I've been a little surprised at that, pleasantly surprised, that clearly it goes to show you that the loyalty for some of these people isn't bound to Scott Frost, it's to Nebraska football.
But that's the way it should be.
Agreed.
You know, Tom Osborne and Frank Solich are loyal to Nebraska football. Just like to me as a fan, like I'm loyal to Nebraska football. I love certain coaches.
You love Pelini, but then you supported.
I love Solich. I love Pelini. Like I loved a lot of the guys on our staff at our time. It's just like in the end, like I'm loyal to Nebraska, Nebraska football. Like, and that's the way it's gotta be. It's like the players and coaches come and go, but like the program is what remains and the, you know,
and I'm glad to see that. I say all that to say, like, I've been surprised by it in a good way. I'm like, wow, I thought there'd be, you know, I didn't know if Tom Osborne was like, I don't know about Matt. It feels too soon because of my relationship with Scott.
My heart is broken and it will never recover. I wrote a poem about it.
The
bad Tom Osborne.
I love doing Tom Osborne impressions with you. I love it.
Oh God.
Oh my God. I gotta move on, or I'm not ever gonna be able to recover. I can do Tom. Oh boy, that's funny. All right, we cannot stay in this.
I was thinking about your Bernie Sanders. Sorry. You got to do one.
My Bernie Sanders impression?
Yeah. How much did they pay Matt Rule? How much does Bernie think?
Tuition in this country is a travesty. Do you know the average, just one semester, average semester tuition? $800
trillion. $800
trillion. $800 trillion. Oh my God. I can't do Tom Osborne impressions in front of you. My heart is broken. I wrote a poem about it. Oh man. It's just been interesting to see. Like, I think, was there like 100 former players back last weekend? There was a whole bunch of former guys back in town. It's just, I think this is the Trev factor though.
This is
where it's important. Like if this was some guy, you know, Johnny Miami, that's like, you know, he's from Miami. Clearly,
yeah.
Hence the name Johnny Miami, and he's coming in here
of Ohio. He's in Ohio. He's an Ohioan.
Now wait a minute. I thought you were Johnny Miami from Miami, Florida. You're Miami.
You're
Ohio.
An Ohio guy.
It is unfortunate. Yeah. Who named their Miami of Ohio? Who named their university like that?
That's who was second.
Yeah, who was second? Because I really would be I hope Miami of Ohio. Do you think they tried to copy and thought they could get away with it and just had to add the Ohio, or they were really disappointed that then Miami.
If they were the Hurricanes as well, then it'd be.
Then it'd be really bad. Yeah. That would be really, really bad. Okay. So ridiculous. I got a bunch of different rapid fire. Anything. This is all the deep stuff that I wanted to get.
800 trillion.
800. You understand? $2.4 gajillion dollars.
2.7. Google.
One hamburger in this country. $454 million.
So good.
I'd been sitting on that bit, an impression, and I finally got. I went to lunch with you last Friday, and I'd been like, I did it to Kim. She didn't think it was that funny. She didn't even really laugh at it, but I needed you. I needed you to do this.
I think it's great. I mean, it's such a great premise. Everything's really expensive.
Okay. There has been a fever around these parts. And it's Dylan Raiola fever.
Mm-hmm.
It is remarkable. Even throughout, like, right when Rule got here, throughout the basketball season, Dylan Raiola came on a visit, went to a game. He got, you know, he got a roar from the crowd. He stood up and he threw the bones to the crowd, got a roar. Like, there has been Dylan Raiola on sports talk radio, on these different publications. It's like a daily update with Raiola. Mitch Sherman went out to Arizona, spent time with the Raiolas. Like, it is a full-fledged fever. But it does kind of feel like something. Did you see? Something seemed to shift a little bit last week. Did you see this story?
No.
So, the 24/7 Sports Director of Recruiting, Steve Wiltfong, revealed his new crystal ball prediction for Raiola, and it's Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Wiltfong, I was reading the story, he's 98.7% accurate for the 2024 cycle in terms of his crystal ball predictions, and then 91.3% correct all time in his predictions. Georgia is going to be Raiola's first official visit. Now, he's still considering USC and Nebraska. There are other recruiting analysts that are split on this, though. Three analysts are predicting Nebraska still, two are predicting USC, and then one is picking Georgia. I guess for you, as you've sat, I have, even though it felt like something maybe kind of shifted last week, I still think Raiola is going to come to Nebraska. Where are you at with Dylan Raiola fever and ultimately how that's going to, where he's going to go?
You know, here's the part that I don't know. So if this were a different era, I would say indications are Nebraska. Like, he, you know, I've seen some of these like updates where it's like him and like, I think we had like the number one tackle and the number, like a top receiver in the country. These guys were all there together. And Raiola was like, you know, making friends and they're communicating and like, and they were talking about how cool it'd be all play together. And they were kind of like hinting at Nebraska, which I would think, does that mean that they're coming to Nebraska?
Yeah.
I think in the old days it did. I think today it's almost like, I don't know if it's like flirting or something. They're like flirting publicly with Nebraska, but have no intention to go. Yeah. So to me, I think it's a 50-50. I think here's the hard part. Georgia's winning national titles, and you walk into a program that has a lot of ready-made NFL guys with you.
That's attractive.
Yeah, it's very attractive. And he could go there and be good. You're sort of like one of many good players at Georgia. You know.
Yeah, you don't have to convince. You don't have to call a bunch of different recruits and convince them to come to Lincoln with you.
Yeah.
They're already in Georgia. They're already in Southern California at USC. Yeah. Like, that helps.
The downside is this, though. Like, there's going to be great quarterbacks coming in every year trying to take your spot. And you'll be remembered there.
Oh, absolutely.
Not like you'd be remembered here. If you come here and you're good, and you help turn this thing back, you're governor. You're like, it's a different animal here than it will be there. They've already proven, like, there. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's almost.
No, it's funny you say that. That would have been what you just kind of said. I've, you know, you like daydream about things. Like, if I had to pitch Raiola, like, that would be the main part of what I would pitch him. We'd be like, you know, the whole, like, a builder or a maintainer.
Yeah.
Like, you go to Georgia and you maintain it. Like, what's the old boy named Stetson Bennett? Like, are you any more infamous or famous than Stetson Bennett? Like, sometimes no. It's hard to even remember, like, all the Ohio State guys, you know? Like, there's going to be
been 10 quarterbacks and they all get to the NFL. And then you're like, that's how you get to the NFL.
Haskins,
you go there.
JT Barrett, Justin Fields, CJ Stroud. Like, are any of those guys any more a legend than the other? Not saying they're not legends, but they're all, you know,
there's 10 of them. There's 10 of them in the last 20 years. You're like, oh, these guys, all very
legends.
Good. This is it's all good. It's all positive. It's nothing bad about that. It's just like there's a unique opportunity here.
Yes.
The unique opportunity is you turn around. If his family's got, you know, the ties. Like, his dad was an All-American here.
Yes.
Like, it means something to their family. but his dad's also played a long time in the NFL. He's going to have a level head to a degree. He'll love the Nebraska thing. His brother's coaching here. I mean, it matters. But, like, he'll want his kid to be set up for the best chance for success. So that could be Georgia. But, like, that doesn't mean
it's
not Nebraska.
Or USC.
Or
I
USC.
Mean, let's not forget about, you
He's
know.
He's a West Coast kid.
And let's not forget that you have Lincoln Riley, who is the best quarterback coach in college right now.
Is he, I actually don't know this, is he a specifically good?
Yeah, I mean, he's the offensive guy, and like he's
but he's
got,
good with quarterbacks specifically?
That's my understanding
of it. I didn't
really
know that. I actually didn't know
You know, you got Caleb Williams out there. I mean, he had, whether it's, you know, Baker Mayfield, old boy, that's Kyler Murray. You know, like he has had all these dudes that have been roaring successes under
Baker,
him.
Baker, Kyler, yeah.
You know, like, so there's also that. Like, I think if you remove everything away from it, and instead of Dylan Raiola, he's, you know, well, who's a famous Dylan?
McDermott?
Dylan. He's Dylan McDermott. You're not even considering Nebraska, right? No. You know? And so, but the fact that he's considering Nebraska, I have felt, and I still feel it, my crystal ball is still, I don't have a crystal ball, but if I had it, it would cost $1.3 trillion.
The crystal balls.
I still pick Nebraska. I still think he's gonna do it. But I also understand how you're sitting there and you're going, like, you, because to me, in some ways, like, you don't want him to rush this decision if you're, like, advising him. But I would say, like, if you want to come to Nebraska and give yourself the best chance to be successful, the sooner you jump in, the better, because then that's going to give, you know, like all these elite guys a chance to come join you.
And it's
or
weird.
You're going to be thrown to Johnny Drop and Billy Bad Route.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Frank 5-flat-40. Frank 5-flat-40. Johnny Drop,
open.
Billy Bad Route.
Yeah, I mean,
Billy Bad Route ran a bad route. Like, well, I'm surprised.
Well, we recruited him for it.
This is Billy Bad Route. Billy Bad Route, his biggest issue, he doesn't run very good routes. But other than that, Billy wants
like Matt Rule's like recruiting strategies. Like, I've seen a lot of movies from the 80s and 90s. Like, I want the fastest guy with the worst hands. I'm going to give him stick'em. There'll be an embarrassing moment at the start of the season. He'll get the stick'em stuck to his jersey. Won't catch it. But by the end of the season,
he will.
He'll be a light. He'll be a superstar.
He seems like a guy that would know all those great stupid movies and obey them. But do you see what I'm saying? Like, I would tell Dylan this. I would say, Dylan, you need to. This is your decision. You need to take your time and make sure you do this right. But if you're going to go to Nebraska, the sooner you do it, the better. Because you are going to then give other top shelf recruits a chance to come join you. You drag your feet and drag this out again. You're going to be throwing to Billy Bad Route.
Yeah,
and you know, Whiff McGee is going to be at left tackle potentially.
No, not Whiff McGee.
Not Whiff McGee. You know, Frankie Fallstart's going to be at right guard. That's not good. But does that make sense?
It does.
Does Billy Bad Route make sense to you?
It does. Okay, Nick, it's very, very much makes no. It's just, here's what's hard though. It's like, you can't put the pressure on him. That's like, you just can't.
I know.
That's the part that it's like, you want to say in your best interest, you do this, but everybody's probably saying that. Hey, look, at Georgia, they're saying, Dylan's come here and then you can recruit for us. And then it's like, I mean, they're saying the same thing we are, but that's where it's just like, he has to have some love for this place beyond just like surface level. It's got to be like, their family's got to be like, we want to do something big. Because right. It's like a fan, you can tell it's like a family.
It would be,
it,
but I go back to what our pitch would be if we were hired by Rule to fly out to Arizona, and which we will do, by the way, if Matt Rule wants us to do this, and pitch Dylan. That would be the pitch, though. Would be like you get Nebraska back.
Yeah,
nothing, and I promise, nothing anywhere else would make you as big of a legend and be as fulfilling on a variety of levels in that.
It'd be like Crouch or Frazier on steroids.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, those guys are beloved. They won here. You know, one's a Heisman, one's a national champion. But, like, if he did something where, like, we were back relevant to any of that, like, any of those realms close to that, I mean, he's a made man. It's done, you know? It's
right.
You're never buying a drink in Nebraska again.
No more. You don't have to pay for the Valentino's buffet.
Yeah.
There's none of that.
Free Val's buffet.
Free cookies and cream pudding.
What can
do you remember
I
cookies and cream pudding for Val? Boy, God. That stuff went hard. Wow. A little confusing. They kind of put it amongst the salad bar, like right by the salad dressing. You had to be damn sure you had the right thing. But the viscosity of the pudding.
Or your
you
salad
knew.
Would be delicious.
Ah! Take some field greens and some cookies or and cream pudding.
Yeah, Oreo cream pudding. Oreo. When I was little, though, it wasn't a problem. I never ate salad. Who ate salad?
Oh, salad's the worst. Are we good on Dylan Rayola Fever? Do you want me to throw a bunch of different stuff at you here?
Yeah,
did you hear about the single digit thing?
Yes.
What do you think of that? So for people that don't know, the tradition that that Matt Rhule had at Temple and Baylor, and he wants to do it here, is jersey numbers 0 through 9 are going to go to the 9 or 10 toughest guys on the team. That's interesting to me. I didn't know are single digit numbers that coveted?
I mean, I think people, skill guys love, like corners and receivers love them. The rest of us are like, who cares? You know, like I was happy with 51. I was like, great.
What were you at New England? You were 91.
Yeah, it's terrible. That's a terrible number.
Like I chose.
They gave 51 to Mayo. It was a first rounder.
Yeah.
But yeah, they gave me 91. I went, this is not good.
Chances of 91 getting re-signed to that second contract or maybe not.
Well, no, 91 you get signed. If they give you 43, which I got at Cleveland, that's
ooh,
a bad sign.
That's a bad.
That's a sign like you may not be coming back.
But no, that
because you have to beat somebody out because in the pros, like linebackers have to be 50s or 90s. And so there's only so many numbers because the D linemen are some 90s.
So when you saw a 43 hanging in your locker,
you can't be a 43 and make the right. You'd have to take somebody else's number, essentially.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. So, like, they give out numbers to just get through camps. But, like, to make it, they have to switch your number. So, like, you want to have a number that you could keep. Does that make sense? Like, because,
right.
like, 91 I could have kept. It's just 43. Couldn't have kept.
Right. Okay. See, the more you learn, this is good. But I mean, it's fine. The single digit thing, I just didn't know. It's cool and whatever resonates with people, great. I there are a couple of things. I didn't realize that single digits were that coveted amongst a lot of amongst people.
Yeah,
and I also think like numbers are one of those things like, yeah, I mean, like I'm looking up at 51 Rude right now, the jersey hanging in here. Behind me, I got 34 at Creighton. That's what I was at Southeast. You know, like it was, if I wouldn't have been able to have 34 at Creighton, I don't think I would have lost my mind.
Well, I guess the point is like, I don't know, like.
But it's a big deal for some
fine.
People.
It's fine. Like, I'm not against it. It's a tradition that he's starting that I'm okay with that. I'm actually okay with that tradition. Now, here's where I'd have a problem is if you do that and you take away the black shirts, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I don't.
You
I don't
know what
like
I'm saying?
That.
But so this is what's I think weird is like there's guys that have had single digits like a Quentin Newsome and then like I mean you know okay maybe he has to earn it back and that's okay I'm okay with that but like I said I would have a problem if you take away like the black I like the black shirt tradition is important to me and that would be one I think would be a mistake to not keep and replace with that
but I do think like I did get into I don't know if you ever watched Last Chance U on Netflix. And, you know, it was a California JUCO, and it was always the day they handed out jersey numbers. It was, this kid went into the coach's office and he was like, 37? You serious?
You serious?
The funniest moment. He looked at the head coach. He was like, you serious?
Yeah, it's like crushed his soul.
Can you imagine you go to the head coach, someone gets 37 for Alabama, goes to Nick Saban's like, 37, coach? You serious?
It's like, how do you do? Here's the thing. It's like, we've always, like, numbers are,
they
are important
for
kids. Like, I'll say it's growing up. If I'm playing basketball, I wanted to wear 33.
Yeah.
I wanted Larry Bird.
Right.
If I was playing football, I was wearing 32.
Right.
Jim Brown was
he's right
guy.
There. Yeah.
I wore 32 growing up because that was my number.
Right. Right.
Those are things that kids do that I think are great. So, like, I get it. But part of, like, getting older was, let's say you get to Southeast High, like you were kind of at the mercy of what the older guys had. So my brother had one of the worst numbers
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Bad.
He got 47.
47.
Because when he was a freshman, he had a chance to play in varsity. And guess what was left? 47. So it's like kind of a compliment. You get to play.
Right.
You get the worst choice of number.
Right.
Right? So, yeah, you can change as you get older. But I think changing your number as you go, I think that's weak sauce a little bit.
Oh, I like that.
I think
I like
it's
that.
So whatever number you
stick with that thing,
you got to ride out the number you've been
getting. I think I like that. I think I like where your head's at with that. I'm fine with it. I'm not like one of those things where I'm like, you know, 9-5-1-16-20, this is terrible. You know, or like 9-5-1-16-20, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. No, I mean, it's fine. I didn't guess it was, when I heard that, I was just surprised by it. I was like, I didn't realize this was a thing here.
Well, it's a little different. It's like, I don't know, it makes those numbers oddly important.
Which I would never have thought those numbers
were
that important.
So what if you're an offensive lineman, right? So like, is it only for skill guys?
That's right. I'm like, who? I know. So you're, because like Cam Jurgens was a tough son of a gun, but.
Could he be zero or one or three?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure how that works.
That's okay, because to me it's like it's another reason for people to get excited about being tough, and maybe it's excites the like skilled guys to be tough, which is maybe important,
right? No, and guys I know I'm all little... for I mean whatever you have to do. We all do stupid things, and coaches are all about creating stupid things to just motivate you. Xavier basketball, they carried this like pretty big rock around to not turn the ball. They turned it over so much, and so Sean Miller created like the turnover rock, and they would have to carry it around when they would have, like, it's all stupid. We're all just creating things here to motivate you.
I'm not against that.
Like,
I'm actually not against any
whatever.
Of it, because it's a way to get a message across to young men who need something to grasp onto.
Right.
And that's great. I mean, fine. I'm good with it.
Now, who sings this song? Are you tough enough? Who sings that
the,
song?
The Thunder, what is it called? The Fabulous Thunderbirds, maybe? Or is it the...
I don't know. But I just hope... I want, when they're actually handing out those, I hope Rule says, hit it, and they play Are You Tough Enough?
What a great song. That is by the Fabulous Thunderbirds. Yes!
That's what if they do that, now I'm all in on this tradition.
Great song.
That's what I want. Couple more rapid-fire things here. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. I did a solo pod on this. I'm not sure. Did you hear Matt Rhule on Bussin' with the Boys when he was asked about? They asked him about like his slow burns. Like, hey, at Temple and Baylor, you know, they had won. You won one or two games in your first year. Do you kind of see a slow burn at Nebraska? And Rhule said that he didn't want it to be a slow burn, and that he felt like that was last year for those guys was like the slow burn. And I'm curious what your thoughts were on that, because I was glad that he said that because I've thought all along this place can say whatever they want. They're not going to be very happy if the idea that you're going to go out there and win two games or something like that and everybody's going to be feeling great about it. I also felt like what he doesn't realize is that, okay, it's been a slow burn for 20 years for the fans.
Yeah.
And everybody's patience is on E. I'm standing by my thoughts that I actually don't think this fan base is going to be super duper patient with everything. But I was glad to hear, because you were wondering like, okay, is there going to be like a legitimate bottoming out and winning 2-3 games?
With
or?
The portal, I actually, my expectations of to win 1 or 2 or 3 games with the portal at Nebraska with NIL, I mean, you should be able to buy 5 or 6 wins.
Right.
You should be able to buy 5 wins, right? I mean, the more I see NIL, the more I
you actually, can change it fast. Like, there used to be a non-negotiable, like, yeah, 3-4 year period.
There's a part of me that thinks this NIL is Nebraska's ripe to use this thing better than most places, right? Like, if there's, we should be in the top 25 every year, because if we're willing to spend more money,
which it seems like,
than 95% of the schools, which it seemingly we are,
right?
How can we not win half our games?
Right.
You know, like, I just think I was initially very scared by NIL. I was like, oh man, are we going to become irrelevant now? I actually feel like it's becoming the opposite. I feel like we have the opportunity to just, like, how much do we want it? How much are we willing to spend? Mm-hmm. It's sort of that mindset. It's a big part of our, I just think we have an opportunity to sort of, like, say, like, look, we don't have to slow burn for 10 years. Like, why don't we just start buying players? Like,
right,
to a degree,
mm-hmm,
I think we can actually do that. We have the infrastructure. I was looking at our, like, the profitability at Nebraska. We're like a top 5 or 10 in the country with, like, what our athletic department football team,
oh, yeah,
earned. Like, we're big time money earners. Like, we make more money profit than Alabama, I think. So there's, like, it was some article I was reading. I was like, wow. I go, we are still kicking butt with how much we're making, which means we can spend some money on facilities and things. And that doesn't include what boosters are paying for these collectives. Like, we should be very competitive pretty quickly.
Yeah, anymore, it's, I agree. There's the idea of a slow burn doesn't necessarily have to be, it doesn't have to be like that, especially at Nebraska. Well, so,
I don't know. I just,
but I just was glad to hear him say that.
I mean, you saw last year, like, our best, our NFL guys were Trey Palmer, Mathis, like,
yeah,
these are hired guns, right? In the,
yeah,
same way, like, Casey Thompson's still here. That's a hired gun. This Jeff Sims, mm-hmm, hired gun. You know, we've got to, like, our line's in trouble. We throw in a tackle. Maybe we could throw in another guy.
Right.
Like, these are little pieces. You know, another D lineman. You know, we're looking decent if we can use this thing to our benefit. So spring ball comes and maybe more in the transfer pool, and we get somebody else that is a big piece of the puzzle.
Who? Okay, you bring up Jeff Sims and Casey Thompson. That was going to be one thing I was asking you. You had to call it right now, and obviously this thing can change month to month to month to month. The starting quarterback for Nebraska next year will be
Casey Thompson.
That's what I think too. I'm not moving off that. But
I saw enough from him last year that I go, tough, smart, competitor. You know, he made some throws and some tough moments. I felt like he was a competitor throughout, even though things didn't go their way all the time. But I think he's got a lot of maturity.
I like that kid, man.
He's got a lot of maturity. I think that's an easy play for Rule to start with. And the younger guy in Sims with maybe more upside, like, if you can keep him here as the backup, which I think he would do, knowing that, like, hey, you're kind, right, of in line.
But then there's the looming Raiola thing too, which makes it interesting. I mean, but you take, I mean, obviously you,
whatever.
But
whatever.
I do think I, cause I did a pod about this, and I was, and you know, the more you hear it makes it interesting. Cause, like, every time Rule would be asked about the quarterbacks before spring ball started, he would kind of quickly talk about Casey Thompson. But then when we talk about Jeff Sims, he would say, I think he's an NFL player.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a pretty bold statement. Because there was a thought where, like, well, maybe that's a window into his subconscious of if he thinks one guy is an NFL player and he doesn't say that about the other guy, maybe he's actually leaning towards the guy that he thinks is an NFL player. But now that spring ball started, he's been complimentary of Casey. He said Casey's like a coach out there.
That's the sign to me. That's the sign to me of, like, who are you going to trust when your job's on the line?
The guy that's a coach out there.
Yeah. And this other guy, I think it's fair. Like, Rule doesn't know Casey Thompson. He doesn't know him. He doesn't.
Right. He's got it. Yeah.
He didn't spend any time with him. So, like, this guy, this Jeff Sims, like, he is an NFL body and arm. Like, I mean, he's got the goods, I think, in terms of, like, physical skills. But Casey, I think you're not going to figure out what he is until you get in the film room until you get on the field with him. Like, I think these things are starting to happen now.
Yeah, and you're
see,
going, oh.
This guy gets, he's a right. football guy. You know, right. he's a tough football player. And so, yeah, I do think this guy's going to give Casey a run, but I feel like gut reaction is right now I know what Casey is, and until I see elsewhere where this he'll be the guy.
I'm with you too. By the way, did you see that last Saturday they took the green jerseys off the quarterbacks and made them live?
Thank you.
Oh,
learn how to play football then. You know?
I know. I think you and I both were not advocating for stupidity and you know, taking a hammer out and crushing each other, but I just if your prevailing thought is just that you don't want to get hurt, 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 like you're not getting ready to play football.
I just I think I always felt like AJ Martinez was a prime example. I didn't think he knew how to run into contact. He never had to do it.
Or Taylor Martinez.
Yeah, those guys.
Both those guys.
They all ran upright and they would like they didn't know how to lower their shoulder pads and squeeze through a hole or go into contact where you
right
you either shield the ball and deliver a blow, but they're not hitting you and drilling you or hitting the ball. Like they didn't really understand that, and it's only because they never ran the ball, like really ran it in practice,
right?
Like ran in practice, ran in games enough where it's natural. It was unnatural some of the ways they ran, even though they're very athletic and very good. It was a very, like, you could tell they were missing that, like, instinct when it came to contact. That's all it was. It was good everywhere but contact.
And I think you also learned, even for someone's ability, like Casey was good at this, and then I think a guy like Zach Taylor was excellent at this. Like, Zach had the balls to stand in the pocket and take a shot and throw it. And like, you got to, the only way you really learn is if you got that or you don't, is if like, you got to take a shot. And so I saw that, and I was, because I still, now I don't know if they've come out with like what the rules are going to be and how it's going to look in the spring game, but like I still, last year's spring game was just like, what is this? You can outthink sad. Yourself pretty bad with some of this stuff.
Like, the more I think about that, like, it's like the two-hand touch was so weak that we like couldn't tell if the guy scored in a touchdown run, like a running back.
Right.
I'm like, what are we doing?
Well, and you know what's interesting is like that ended up being that should have been a warning sign for how the team played at the start of the year. They clearly they couldn't tackle.
That was a big part of the first month, but I think it was like you can convince yourself, you know, like, well, what if we hurt somebody? Isn't that going to be way worse than like you can't play the game of football thinking like that.
No.
You got to just like get good at football by playing it, and then when you get so good that it's like,
right,
let's not get Patrick Mahomes hurt. Well, then don't get Patrick Mahomes
right.
hurt.
Right.
But don't tell me that everybody's Patrick Mahomes. You know,
I couldn't agree more.
These guys aren't good enough to
not
just
get
be
hit.
Like, we can't let, gosh, we can't let Oliver Martin get hurt this year. Like, sorry, like he's not, you know, Randy Moss.
Right,
like,
right.
Make him play. Like, make these quarterbacks who have never done anything, like Harburg and
Richard Torres yeah.
and Jeff Sims. Like, I'm sorry, they should be playing live in the spring game,
right?
Live, like, I don't care.
That's what I think. But and so I loved to hear that last week. So like, oh God, thank you very much. A couple more things, we're out of here. Did you see the rule signed? He ended up signing a whopping 39 scholarship players, which is one of the largest in the country. Are you ever a little nervous? Like, I feel like one of the mistakes that Frost staff made in the first class was taking too many kids, and they kind of shotgun wedding a lot of these guys, and a lot of them either being busts or they transferred because the snow fell, and they were like, what the hell is this? Wait, huh? A coat? I didn't sign up for a coat. And do you ever get worried about that? Like, taking too many guys, or maybe there's just roster nowadays with the portal. Like, you turn them and burn them. Like,
the portal, I think if you I think if you like a guy, get him, because there's a lot of guys that you probably can go. I think there might be a lot of that more like, are you done here? Like,
more of they're still over. They're not like kind of over the 85 scholarship. Yeah. They're like way over it. There's gonna be cut day. There's gonna be cut day.
I actually don't know how that works.
I don't either.
Other than I think you can hint at them, like,
oh yeah, you're going there and be like, all right, so North Texas, what do you think? I can call that coach.
You don't have to honor the scholarship every year. It's only like So they could technically cut people.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be an there's a way to it's the ugly side of the business I've always said one of the misnomers about all transfers. Now the portal has made it hard to sift through it, but like, not all people that are transferring are necessarily transferring because they want to transfer. They've been kind of forced out. Yeah. But there's going to be some dudes that are getting straight up Gladstoned. Cut him out. Matt Rhule, Joey Gladstone. Joey's got some news for you. Yeah, you are cut it out.
Speaking of portal, Hunter Salas. Does Nebraska have a chance?
Not based on the initial reports that you've read.
Oh.
Because he wasn't even, I don't think Nebraska was in his final like 8 or 10 schools when he first came out. I know, it's unfortunate, right?
Does Creighton have a chance?
Well, Creighton right now doesn't, they only have, I guess they had another guy enter the portal now, a guard off the bench. So they got a couple of scholarships to give. I guess now just one.
They got Trout, though.
They got Isaac Trout.
Isaac Trout, yeah.
So their problem is, like, they have, you know, Baylor Shireman, Trey Alexander, Arthur Kaluma. They got starting wings and guards that all could come back.
Yeah.
So they got to kind of wait. So it's hard. And my guess is Hunter Salas, like Creighton, because Creighton loved Hunter out of high school. And my guess, Salas was just on the bench at Gonzaga. He's probably looking for a situation that isn't the bench. And the reality is right now, like, if all those guys came back, Hunter Salas is coming off the bench. He was just doing that. You know what I mean? So he's probably looking for a for sure thing.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. It would be fun to. I mean, a part of me is like, God, just go load up on all former Nebraskans, have them play for Nebraska or Creighton. Gosh. It's exciting. Like for me, like watching Shireman this year from Aurora, Nebraska. Like, there's just a little something there. Like, he was the one dude that would come over to me before games, and we would dap it up. It was Shireman.
Yeah.
The one dude that like there was just. There was an understanding. It was like, hey, you know, you're a Nebraska dude. Like, it's just understood like that. But it is exciting to that Trout is going to Creighton, though. But we'll see. What else? Did I have anything else? I mean, I think that's probably it.
Oh, I think we went deep on our first pod.
Oh, man.
I hope people are happy that we're back and we're.
Things were pent up there.
Yeah, it feels good.
That's an hour. Look at us. Hour and 4 minutes, not bad.
That's just smooth operation.
Okay, well, let's do this again soon. Let's not wait 2-3 months for a check, okay? Are you tough enough?
A Huda Media Production.